The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker tov, shavua tov. I wish I could say we're taking it easy, Howard, but unfortunately I can't quite slip into your mode of operation today.
Yeah.
And unfortunately our news is not exactly taking things easy either.
No, well it very, very rarely does. So what is going on? Let's just start off with the Gazan border. What is the, there seems to be an escalation there.
Well, there is an escalation, and the escalation comes in the form of incendiary balloons and incendiary devices. We are back. We are back to where we used to be a year or so ago. I'm not quite sure when the last time was that we spoke about incendiary balloons and incendiary devices. But the sending of balloons and explosive devices has begun again. And there were actually some quite frightening scenes of, first of all, incendiary balloons that were sent over the Gazan border, which actually caused fires on the Israeli side of the border. There were a couple of instances where balloons had explosive devices attached to them. One actually exploded in midair in the company of some residents quite nearby where some people were located. So that's really not great news at all. And as a result of that, the IDF decided that they would retaliate in a very, very limited sort of way. They struck a military outpost. They hit a Hamas target, like a single target, very, very low-key response to this particular situation. Some say that, you know, the uptick in the sending of incendiary devices comes as a result of Qatar ceasing its aid to the Gaza Strip. And let's remember that the school children in Gaza returned to school this week for the first time in 5 months. And the economic situation in Gaza is pretty dire. Not that it was good to begin with, but obviously Corona hasn't helped the situation at all. So there are some people, some commentators who have suggested that this uptick in the sending of incendiary devices comes as a result of some of the economic hardships and the fact that the Qataris are not sending aid as they were doing until quite recently. There was also an incident along the Gaza border where there was gunfire apparently directed at Israeli workers who were working along the border fence, and the work was stopped along the fence. There were smoke shells that were fired in order to allow the workers to get away from that area safely. Fortunately, there were no reports of any casualties, no damage has been caused. But of course, all the time that we see these balloons coming over with explosive devices attached to them, or balloons being sent over with even just with a little flame attached, where if it lands in a tree or lands in a crop of, you know, some sort of an agricultural crop, that it immediately sets fire to it. Of course, the area around Gaza is extremely dry. We haven't had rain already for a few months. So any little flame can potentially cause a huge fire. And we have seen that in the past a few years ago. These balloons were being sent over just with a little flame, and they were causing massive fires and lots of damage to property and to agricultural land. So this is quite a serious escalation, but one that we have to obviously take in proportion. And let's hope that it won't escalate beyond the current situation.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, this time of year with the heat and the dryness doesn't help at all. Unsubstantiated rumors suggest that Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah has left Lebanon to avoid unrest in the wake of the Beirut explosion. So it's very interesting, Anthony. I proposed a theory earlier that I would be interested in your response to. And I was thinking about it over the weekend, and I found the denial and the distancing, the minute this event took place, Beirut, the Lebanese government, everybody immediately said, no, this was an internal incident, a domestic incident, this is what happened. It would have been a perfect opportunity, as so often happens in the Middle East, to point fingers at a country like Israel. We know that Lebanon and Israel are officially still at war. Lebanon doesn't doesn't value Israel at all, and in fact it doesn't even see it as a legitimate state. It would have been a perfect opportunity to point fingers and to blame Israel, yet it didn't do so. And I wonder if the reason that it didn't do so is because it didn't want Israel either disclosing what it does know about the event or having or pushing for an international investigation around what really happened. By shutting that store, by shutting that avenue down immediately, it doesn't allow Israel into that picture and into that discussion. But yet we are still seeing a lot of pushback happening within Lebanon, a lot of unrest, a lot of dissatisfaction with the government. Is there more to this story than is being let on?
I think that this is a very fascinating story, and it's not going away anytime soon. I think that this is a story that's going to roll. I think what we've seen so far, the unrest that we've seen, immediate chaos and the unrest and the outpouring of anger towards Hamas, ironically, but of course also towards the Lebanese government.
Sorry, Hamas or Hezbollah?
Hezbollah. Towards Hezbollah, not Hamas. Yeah. My apologies. The outpouring of anger towards Hezbollah and of course towards the Lebanese government for me has been fascinating. Of course the tendency was to try to distract the attention of people away from the explosion and to criticize Israel and to castigate Israel and to say that if there was finally a response saying under no circumstances will Israeli aid be received or accepted or taken in any sort of way, even though interestingly enough, French President Macron was saying to the Lebanese government, essentially, beggars can't be choosers, and if Israel is offering you aid, then you may as well give it some serious consideration because you guys are seriously in need of a bit of help right now. The Lebanese government is teetering, literally teetering on the brink of collapse as a result of this explosion. This has been a physical explosion, but it's also been a massive political explosion. I was astonished to read these rumors that Hassan Nasrallah has run away from Lebanon, where he's been welcome for decades, where Hezbollah have set up their base already for quite some time. Apparently he is now somewhere in Syria, if the rumors are to be believed. I'm not quite sure exactly how true that is. But if it's true that he has run away from Lebanon, this is like an earth-shattering event in Lebanese history, in the Lebanese political sphere. And the government is being blamed. And I agree with you that it would have been fairly simple for the government to point fingers towards Israel and say this is something that Israel did. But there's a problem here, Howard, and the problem is how do you hide away the fact that inflammable material was stored for an indefinite period of time right within a residential area? You can't hide that away. The fact that Israel might have come and, you know, attacked it and exploded it and taken advantage of the situation doesn't detract from the fact that there was some negligence involved in storing material of that nature where they stored it. And I don't know that the Lebanese government would be able to escape from that, even if they pointed fingers in Israel, at Israel and said it's all Israel's fault, and to try once again, as they've done for so many years, for decades, for even who knows how long, pointed fingers in Israel and saying all the problems that befall our country are as a result of the evil Israelis. I don't think that this one was going to hold any water at all. Hence, I don't think that they even tried to do it. And to be honest with you, I don't even know that they've even had time to think about it because they are fighting fires literally at every possible place. They are under such immense pressure and such immense threat. Now with the Hezbollah support effectively having dissipated, if we do believe that Nasrallah has run away to Syria, it really leaves the whole playing field in Lebanon wide open. And it's obviously with where Israel is concerned, even though Hezbollah presented a massive threat on Israel's border, but there was something that was quite well known about it. Now we're going into a huge unknown situation, and it's going to be interesting to see who fills these vacuums and how things transpire. But my inclination is to believe that the playing field in Lebanon has changed without being able to go back to what it was before. Really, we're moving into a brand new playing field, which will not return to the situation that was before.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Is there a sense that that things will change in Lebanon? I mean, before the Hezbollah got so actively involved, there was of course a civil war that went on for years, and the country was decimated. That created the vacuum. In fact, that allowed the current situation. There must be some hesitancy to go back to that, because that wasn't a lot better either. That state of war.
Well, interestingly enough, the Christian population in Lebanon, which at one stage was in excess of 50% of the population of Lebanon, is now down to kind of 30-odd% or thereabouts. And that's not only because the Muslim population has grown in the way that it has, but it's largely because Christian Lebanese have actually left the country. Mm. And the Christian Lebanese were a very, very valuable asset to that country. They had a lot of influence in building what Lebanon used to be. I mean, Lebanon used to be called the French, the Riviera of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. It was really, compared to the French Riviera in every respect, it was a very well-to-do, well-respected, and quite wealthy kind of area. And once the Christians started to escape because of the civil war, of course, all of that went away. So what's going to be fascinating for me is to watch and see whether some of the diaspora of Lebanese, maybe some of those Christians who ran away all those years ago, may not be inclined to return and just try somehow to have some part in rebuilding this country after this disaster. That for me is going to be the most fascinating thing to watch.
It really will be. All right, let's go back to talk a little bit more about what's going on within Israel's borders and in terms of the Corona cabinet and coronavirus. What is the latest there?
Well, we do have to talk about Corona. The Corona cabinet met again yesterday. There were further restrictions that were placed, or perhaps just more stringently stated. I don't know that they're new restrictions, but I think just more stringently stated. And just to be clear, no more than 10 people can gather together in an indoor area, and no more than 20 people can gather together in an outdoor area. And I think that that's mostly directed towards prayer groups. Okay. Because people still want to get together for a minyan, for a service at the mosque or the church or whatever it is. So the rule is, if you're going to gather indoors, then you're going to be 10 people or less. And if you want to have more than 10 people, then you're going to be outdoors, but certainly no more than 20. So that is the hard and fast rule at the moment. What's interesting is that also, travel in private vehicles has been limited to no more than 2 people who are not living within the same household. And I think that that makes eminent sense, because obviously people, once you're in a car, are in a very closed area and quite close to each other. So that, I think, does make sense. But there has also, at the same time, been an attempt to try to open things up a little bit. And, for example, cultural activities are going to be allowed. Events and concerts and cultural activities of that sort will be allowed, but they're going to have to be conducted using social distancing for groups of 20 people or more. So a group of 20 people can be put together in a capsule, and they can enjoy whatever the cultural event is together. The next group of 20 people needs to be a certain distance away, removed from them, so that you have effectively these groups of 20 in these larger halls, larger theaters, larger locations. And in that way, concerts and events like that can go ahead, and potentially even, I suppose, spectators could attend sports events in that sort of way, a group of 20 people here and a group of 20 people there. Obviously, you won't fill the stadium, but you will certainly have some audience, some crowd along those games. So that's the new kind of way of doing things, in order to try somehow to get the cultural events back on the road again. And again, it's all about trying to encourage the opening of the economy and some semblance of usual life, while also maintaining social distancing and, of course, everybody wearing masks and all of those sorts of rules. Unfortunately, Israel has already now hit 600 people who have died from corona-related illnesses since the very, very beginning, which is about 5 or 6 months ago now. We finally hit that 600 mark. It's very unfortunate. The second wave is proving to be more deadly than the first wave by some distance. And of course, we're still trying to get our arms around how to keep things moving while keeping people separated and getting a control over the infection rate.
Yeah, and Anthony, very quickly, because I do think it's important, the bickering has continued amongst members of the government, and it does seem increasingly unlikely that the government is going to survive. What are the main issues?
Well, the main issue, I think, I mean, it depends if you want to talk about the main issue, which is on the, which is open to the general public, or the main issue, which is kind of behind the scenes. And I think the main issue behind the scenes is that the Prime Minister doesn't want to allow Benny Gantz to enjoy the rotation, which is due to take place towards the end of next year. And therefore, he's going to do almost whatever he can in order to prevent that rotation from taking place. And of course, the immediate issue on the agenda right now is the budget. We have to have a budget which theoretically should be passed later this month. If we do not have a, and the coalition agreement says that this will be a 2-year budget. The Prime Minister is now saying he will not agree to passing a 2-year budget. Benny Gantz is also not agreeing to stand back from what the coalition agreement says. So we potentially have a flashpoint over the budget, which is only a few weeks away and which could potentially send us to elections as early as November of this year.
Unbelievable. Cannot imagine that we are back there again. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 as we always do. Have a fantastic day.